Blog Talk Radio.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bet.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too.
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year. Big Ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Hello, everyone. This is Peter Paul Brizola, and yes, we'll pay through the nose if we don't get rid of some of those corrupt career politicians, not only on the national level in Congress, but on the state level here, especially in California, where we have career politicians and political facilitators. Excuse me, still got my bloody cold. Interesting day today, April 13th. Fortunately, it's not Friday. It's the birthday of one of the greatest presidents of the United States, Thomas Jefferson, who was born in, 1746, if I'm not mistaken. Excuse me. And let's see, some interesting things. This is kind of funny. In 1796, the first elephant arrived in the United States. It was shipped from Bengal, India, and that will come up later in the program. And, of course, the Republicans didn't adopt the elephant as a symbol, I think, until after the Civil War. I'll recheck that. I didn't have time to check it again. Today also is a day connected to merchandisers. In 1852, Frank Woolworth, the guy who started the Woolworth Five and Dime stores, he was born. And, of course, the other one was, I forgot. But anyway, pennies. James C. Penney started the first store in a place called Kemner, Wyoming. If you've ever driven across Wyoming, you come in from Nebraska and Fort Sterling, and on I think it's Route 90-94. Haven't done it for many years, and it looks like the backside of the moon. And then the other side of Wyoming is there's the middle of the state, and of course Yellowstone, which I've been through. And then there's the other side of the state, Evanston, which is the home of the state's mental institution. Some politicians belong there. Also today, we have the commemoration of three massacres in military history. In 1921, we had the Amritsar massacre in India, where General Sir Harry Dyer, they had a peaceful protest, and you can see it. It's very accurately depicted in Sir Richard Attenborough's film Gandhi. I recommend that you see it. It's one of the great films. Anyway, Sir Reginald Dyer, ironically, British officer, born in India, went to school in Ireland and, of course, Sandhurst. Fascinating man. During World War I, he was detached, or not detached, but served in the Middle East to prevent the infiltration of Persia from Persian, which was, I guess, the Germans and whatnot were meddling as usual, into Afghanistan, what was called the Northwest Frontier also. So they had this protest in, I think it was 1923. I'm not sure I got my dates right. And what happened was one of the bloodiest massacres perpetrated by the British Army, worse than anything that ever happened in Northern Ireland on a single day, although they've had many massacres involving the Black and Tans, which were the worst, one of the worst detachments of the British Army of occupation in Northern Ireland, or the British Army, if you want to call it that. Anyway, he had prior knowledge. He was commander of the British forces in that part of India, and he had prior knowledge. He did nothing after they I think about 1,000 people were massacred. He did nothing to provide medical aid. He was there was a public outcry and inquiry. Even the great colonialist Winston Churchill trashed him, and he was put on the promoted and put on the retirement list. Quite fascinating. And then we have in 1943, and this is a very relevant today. You've heard of the Polish airplane carrying the top officials of Poland, except for the prime minister, to this 70th commemoration of the massacre at Cotton Forest, now which involved about 21,000 top officers or officers of the Polish army. Now, what had happened, the build-up to this was, there's always been this fight over between Russia and Germany over Poland, and of course in the 15th century, the Poles were kicking Russian butt. Also, the Polish general, Jan Sobieski, protected in the 15th century, he defended the Western nations from Islam, the Turks, at Vienna. And out of that defeat of the Turks at Vienna, he turned back the Islamic hordes. Contrary to this BS about a religion of peace, it's been a religion under the name of Islam and Muhammad that had forcibly imposed their will on conquered peoples. And it one of the horrible things that they did, if a Christian, we get the term Christian dog, if they weren't circumcised, they were given a partial circumcision. It's carried on even up into the Russian-Afghan war, where captured Russian soldiers were, shall we say, what was called cut. Anyway, what happened was, after the Germans defeated at the Berlin Axis, Berlin-Moscow Pact with von Ribbentrop and Molotov, they made a deal to carve up Poland. And Hitler planned to attack Russia, but he had to stall the Russians because he wanted to win on the Western Front, which he did, surprisingly, in six weeks, May 1940, defeated the French army, which was superior, had as many tanks, but they just didn't have the tactics. They were using World War One tactics, and that led to the rise of General de Gaulle, who was the Free French leader. But anyway, what had happened after the Polish army surrendered, the Russians got control, Stalin got control of the occupation area where those Polish soldiers were. And he had already made the decision he was going to, he foresaw that the Russians would have to win in the West to extend their hegemony over the what became the countries behind the Iron Curtain. To do this, to prevent a military uprising, what he did was he ordered the execution of all the massacre of all of these officers that were taken and were in Russian hands. They were taken to the Cotton Forest and were executed one by one. And then he tried to blame it on the Germans. This is the one thing that they can't blame on the Nazis, as Churchill would say, that there was an international outcry about this, and then the Russians kept blaming the Germans. But then somebody discovered that they were in winter coats, and then they did a check. Was the German army, the Wehrmacht, in that area at the time? Could they have possibly done this? And then somebody brought this up, and then there was a forensic medical examination, and it was discovered that the Russians did it, and the KGB's or NKVD's style was to shoot people in the back of the neck. They even did that at the Lubyanka prison. And so there are a lot of controversy and questions about what really happened to this plane. Why did it go down? I don't even use the word conspiracy, but it still remains interesting and certainly controversial to this day. Also, in 1948, we had the Hadassah massacre in what was known as Palestine at the time, later known as Israel, when President Truman recognized them, and about 73 medical personnel, doctors, nurses, medical students, and one British soldier were murdered, assassinated, I guess you could say, by an outfit called a religious nut outfit. What the heck is it? Excuse me. I have so many things here I get confused, even myself. They were called the Religion of Peace. I don't know what the hell that is, but that happened then. Among the other things that happened on this date, We had in 1974 those of us who use the internet and satellites communications. In 1974, the Western Union launched the first commercial satellite in conjunction with NASA. Also, Bill Clinton, president, was saying he wasn't ashamed about being impeached. Well, so much for that. Another birthday, which is also important, two of them, two British scientists and military people. Robert Watt, the inventor of radar, he was born in 1892, and that was a decisive instrument that helped us to defeat the Nazis and the Axis powers in World War II. Excuse me, I still have that cold. And then a guy named Arthur Travers Bomber Harris was born in 1892. He was the guy, the air marshal in command of the British RAF, Royal Air Force, who he promoted bombing the hell out of Germany, and he worked with the 8th Air Force, Carl Spatz, General Carl Spatz. Great movie on the 8th Air Force, to digress for a minute. See 12 O'Clock High with Gregory Peck. Great film. And Dean Jagger, I highly recommend it, about the 8th Air Force and their how they got honed their tactics to do daylight precision bombing over Germany. But Harris believed in saturation bombing. He would send a flotilla of up to 1,000 planes over Germany and the occupied countries and bomb places like Essen, which is where the Krupp factory was located, and what the heck happened here? Other things like that. So things came to a head. He was very controversial, but extremely competent. In fact, he had been he had worked all over the world. He was sent to the Northwest frontier after World War I to try to keep peace up in that area, Afghanistan, Northwest frontier of Afghanistan, became Pakistan, and then India. And then there was the notorious and controversial, even to this day, some Germans have not forgiven Bomber Harris, that was his name, where they had the 796 bombers were sent to bomb Dresden, which is the sacred culture capital of Germany. The first orchestra in the world in 15th century started there, was founded there. Beautiful art going back centuries. And then, of course, those of you who are gourmets, that you've heard the term Dresden blue, dishes that came had their origin from Dresden, Germany. And that was the firestorm, and it was even that firestorm, over nearly 2,000 tons of bombs were dropped on Dresden that night in 1944, and was worse than the singular atomic bombs that were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. To this day, there even when he was controversial after World War II, but he finally got his due in death. He died in 1984, and still the Germans were mad at him. And he did get a baronet after the war, and then, in effect, was put on the retirement list. He retired to South Africa, but then he returned to England and died in 1984. Very interesting man, extremely competent, but very controversial. But these are the people who make history, whether we like it or not. And they protect us. And let's see. Oh, also today, those of you who are Civil War aficionados, Fort Sumter in South Carolina surrendered to the Confederates on this day. And then what else? Oh, yes, and in 1741, the British Military Academy at Sandhurst. And we'll be bringing up again Brigadier Engel, who studied there along with his classmate, the famous actor, and he also served in World War II, David Niven. And then also today, the birthday in 1907, Harold Stassen was the youngest governor ever elected at the time, and he was governor of Minnesota, and he's probably the man who's run for president more than anybody else except perhaps William Jennings Bryan. And he was a Republican and was supposed to be, quote, a liberal. Also, those of you who are into drama, Samuel Beckett was born in Ireland, and his famous play was called Waiting for Godot. And those of you who like Native American accomplishments, this one's controversial. 1933, Senator Ben Nighthorse Campbell was born, and he was a senator from Colorado. But we petitioned him to help to inquire into the Stephen Nery U.S. Navy case and we got no response from him. And so I guess he's just one of those, what they call dime store Indians. And I'm part Native American, and I can say that. Also today is the commemoration, if you want to call it that, of the Greek dictator Metaxas. Now, he's the only guy that a liquor is named after. He died in 1941. Oh, and for the media morons, this infamous date in 1981, Janet Cook of the Washington Post had to return her Pulitzer Prize that she got for this piece of awful, horrible fiction called Jimmy's World, about a black kid who was hooked on cocaine, got hooked on cocaine, and lived in a public housing project. The whole thing turned out to be a fraud. Unfortunately, it hasn't been a lesson to a lot of people like this guy, Remnick, the editor at the New York Times, who just tried to do a trash job on Jack Cashel in his expose of Mr. O, Obama, who's also been exposed by other newspapers in Kenya, the Evening Standard, which is out of Nairobi, which has printed stuff from 1984, which identifies Barack Obama as a son of Kenya when he was running for senator from Illinois, and that's controversial in and of itself. Also today on the Pentagon website, the Navy Criminal Investigative Service, or JAG Service, I guess they work together. They do work together. They changed their name from Navy Investigative Service. So, for people who don't know the history of the Navy had is the oldest military intelligence service in the United States, and for good reason, because they were posted abroad, and the ships had to travel around the world. Anyway, they come out with this statistic that they're paying attention, so they say, of sexual predator victims. The claim is 91% of those reporting are related to females, and I guess the rest are male. But given the psychology of males who are raped, they don't go around talking about it, and such is the case of Stephen Nery. But there's a lot more, and so nobody's looking at the cases of sexual predators who are civilians who prey on military personnel. We've got an estimated 10 here in California alone, and the guy who did it, Randy Kraft, not related to Kraft Foods, is sitting on death row, and we'll get into more of that because it's quite interesting, the death row here in California, which is being held up by scrutiny of the cases at the Ninth Circuit headquarters here in San Francisco. But we suspect, and there are victims who were in the military, especially Army victims, who are speaking out, that they have gone to the Veterans Administration to try to get psychological help, psychiatric help that they are entitled to because of service injuries, and that is an injury to be raped in the military. And they've been ignored, but they're speaking out. And then we have a case from Indiana, and I'm surprised Mike Pence hasn't responded on this one, of Brian Partridge, a 19-year-old Navy sailor who was raped, and he got court-martialed and kicked out. So, you know, when they're not dealing with the homosexual predators, and we have these propagandists in Congress and in the media, which are pushing repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, but they're not looking at who's really behind it, and there are these homosexual pornographers, and we'll put more of this up on our YouTube website and also on our Amicus Veritas, which you can access by going to verzola.com, verzola.com. And go to YouTube, Amicus Veritas, AmiCusVeritas. It is an eclectic video website, and we just put up the last British American survivor, an excerpt from his life, Colonel Trevor Hodges, who was 19 years old, survived Gallipoli. Fascinating story. He got out on the Britannic, a British the ship of the White Star Line, a sister ship of the Titanic, and he was disembarked from the ship, and it became a medical ship before it was sunk mysteriously. And a fascinating story. And then in World War II, he served in the U.S. Army as a colonel of WAX up here in Northern California. Fascinating story. So that's up there on our YouTube site, Amicus Veritas, so you can access that. And those of you who drive Toyotas and are concerned about this ongoing and increasing controversy, we have the Toyota that's flipped on its hood, Not a hood, it's a roof, and the New Shadow got the video of that and posted it. We posted it, so you can check that out. We still haven't found out how many people were injured, and it looks like it was hit from the side, but we have driven one of those, and we had a similar problem back in August of 2009. But I would suggest to all, we're going to put out information well-documented and researched on how young males and also women can prevent themselves from being victims of sexual predators, especially when you're out drinking or partying, and what you can do to protect yourself. And there'll be some advice from a Russian diplomat whom we met when we were correspondent on how to avoid hangovers. So that also not only is fun, but it's informative. And I was a victim myself of a Mickey Finn stuck into my drink when I went to the toilet in a bar. So we've been there, and it's been done to us, but we survived, and so we want to pass on this information. Also at the Amicus Veritas YouTube site, there's an update on the smart meters. Apparently the people we talk to in the utility industry have said that it's going to take about 2 years to install these meters in every house. They're tearing up the streets. I don't know how much this is costing. There's controversy about how accurate these things are, but they still have to send around meter readers. And, of course, what's going to happen to these people when all this stuff supposedly will be put on computers and read at a headquarters? We're going to have a new group of unemployed if this goes on. I heard this is already happening. So that's something you should pay attention to and monitor your own if you have your own meter. You're supposed to. Another thing is, if you're living in an apartment building, we discovered this in a case that I had to investigate, where this woman was wondering about why her utility bills were so high. She was living in a studio in downtown San Francisco and in a large apartment building, and it was discovered that two apartments were on her meter, and she was paying for them, and she didn't know it until she started questioning the amount of the bill. In California, it's illegal to do this. There's supposed to be separation of the meters for each apartment. So I'll check to make sure that's the information that we researched several years ago, and I'll check to make sure that's still the law. But you got to monitor these things because you'll be taken advantage of if you don't. Ignorance is not bliss. What you don't know can hurt, harm, and cost you. Also, we haven't heard back from some of the espresso shops which sell coffee by the multi-gallons in the morning every day. And we have discovered, and other people, we've verified this with other people, that some of these shops may be watering down the amount of coffee in, say, like a large espresso or coffee of the day. There's the amount of water. The cost is the same, $1.50 to $2 or more, but the strength of the coffee seems to have been diluted. And so we emailed one major coffee chain, and they said, we're sending you a free coupon, and in the future, if this happens, complain to the management of that particular shop. We have not heard from Starbucks. Now, those of you who see these coffee corners in supermarkets, those are franchises to that supermarket, for instance, Safeway. So if you got complaints about Starbucks in a Safeway, you don't go to Starbucks in Seattle. You go to the manager of the Safeway store or whatever store that might be in. So I hope this information is helpful because people did know, and it's very difficult to get a hold of people in Seattle. Upcoming next month, we've got most of our equipment. We've gone over it and corrected the problems. We'll be raising the issue, or we have raised the issue. It's 1944, 1945, the end of the war in Europe, and then the concentration camps and the work camps were exposed for what they really were. Question is, all those mean-looking, Valkyrie-looking women, were some of these women lesbians? So all the books, and more books have been printed about Hitler in World War II than any other subject, but very little on, if anything, their excerpts in books, on the lesbians in Germany, and did they run some of these camps? Because some of the things these women did to captured military personnel, to Jews, the medical tests that were that they participated in, were these people closet lesbians? Were they active lesbians? It's certainly a subject that, you know, it needs to be thoroughly documented. I'm sure the Germans have documents somewhere, and probably the Pentagon, because they got all those documents that weren't destroyed after World War II. But it's a fascinating subject. The other subject, I'll bring it up again, is the Kempeitai, the Japanese Secret Service in World War II, what they did to Richard Sorge, who was a communist, supposedly a communist. He was the German correspondent in Japan. He was working as part of the Red Kapelle, the Red Choir, I think that's the word. They were Stalin spies. They were very successful. They warned Stalin that Hitler was going to attack Germany. He didn't listen. Stalin didn't listen. And finally, near the end of World War II, the Japanese Secret Service captured or arrested Sorge and put him through some horrible tortures, and then we don't know exactly how he died. But that's the only one book has come out on the Kempeitai, and I think it's University of North Carolina. Those of you who are concerned about medical, the history of medical insurance, the University of North Carolina came out with another book, which we were given a review copy. I wrote a review on it in Veritas, and we'll put it up, and interviewed a lot of doctors. One of my favorite conventions was the urologists, for a lot of reasons. But anyway, it's fascinating what happened to the Jewish doctors, or doctors who were Jewish ethnic, because a lot of them did not practice. And didn't even, it's interesting, many of them that I have met don't even believe in circumcision, whether it's ritual or in the hospital. And in fact, in San Francisco, it's become an elective, no pun intended. But anyway, and because of some of the horrible accidents that have happened to baby boys, they were forced to leave Germany. My stepmother's father stayed on, and we don't know what happened to him. And she fled and met my father when he came from Seattle. Anyway, they came to America. They were trained in the best medical schools in the world, Vienna, Heidelberg, Berlin, even Rome, Paris. Americans used to go to Europe for the best medical training there was, but got so provincial and so protective and so biased that when these famous doctors and professors of medicine that come that fled to the United States, they wouldn't let them practice. They wouldn't let them take the test. So that's why we see a lot of Jewish hospitals around the United States, because guys finally got smart and said, okay, you won't let us in yours, we'll start our own. And these are some of the best hospitals in the world. And, of course, they don't discriminate, the ones at least that I know about, that they allow Catholic priests to come in to attend to the patients that are Catholic and that sort of thing. But fascinating history. And then Otto von Bismarck, his role, the Reich's Chancellor of the Second Reich, founded modern Germany, what his role in starting a national health care in Germany. And he was not, wasn't altruistic. Those weren't his motives. So stay tuned on Thursday, and we'll have some interesting things. We'll have an update on Colonel Hodges. We'll have, we fixed his interview. You can go to the YouTube to see some of the pictures. There are a lot of them of Gallipoli. And let's see what else. And then in May and June, we have Berrigan, the deputy commander at Normandy, who was in charge of the Corps of Engineers who built the Mulberry Bridges. Fascinating guy. He knew General Patton, studied at West Point, so we'll have his interview. He only did one, and so this is part of that. And then some of the British, and I have one of the Canadian forces. I think I have one of the Polish Air Force. So I'll have to find that. But anyway, I want to thank you all for listening, and this interview, this segment will remain on the web as I intended, and we're going to sign off. What happened here? I don't know what happened. But anyway, let's see. No, we're not going to play horse Wessel. But anyway, since we're tuning off, turning off in 6 seconds, 5 seconds, so go to our websites, YouTube, Amicus Veritas, and Verzola.com, V-E-R-Z-O-L-A.com. Thank you for listening, and when you tune in later. Mm-hmm.